Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I can see it now. I show up at the golf course and the suit shows up with two guys he picked up at Dunkin' Donuts. I'm telling you, Sean, it says disaster written all over it. That's unless the two guys he gets at Dunkin' Donuts can legitimately play.
Oh, the suit wanted me to ask you if you wanted to bring someone.
If I wanted to bring what? I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, I just got a text back from the suit. He goes, see if Steve wants to bring someone.
If I want to bring someone?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Wednesday.
8 days away.
Like, tell him to get Dave Ritchie, all right? This is painful. Oh. It's like, I mean, I'm not even sure I would put him in charge of a one-man band. All right, we'll come back with Corey Chavis at the bottom of the hour. Played in the NFL for 11 years and now is a CBS Sports NFL draft specialist. I love this. This will be great. We're having a lot of fun with Corey Chavis. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day, often compared to the suit, Bob Uecker.
Swing and a fly to right and deep. Get up! Get up! Get out of here and gone! For Eric Thames, and he strikes again. That's number 9, and he got it all.
He then hit a second home run last night. Milwaukee beat the Reds 11-7. Bob Uecker with a call on WTMJ last night in Milwaukee. Uecker has done the Brewers games, oh my goodness, 40 years? 40 years he's done that? Amazing. Everybody knows him from TV, being on talk shows, great sense of humor, fooling around and so forth. Let me see. How long has Bob Uecker done the Brewers games? I want to say at least 40 years. Let's see. Uecker. His net worth is right up there with yours. There you go. All right. Brewers. Of course, his playing career. One of my favorite lines of... He always had. He said, I had a grand slam, which is a big hit. He says, it flew out of there, made it 13-2. Broadcasting career. He actually began doing the radio broadcasts the second year the Brewers were in Milwaukee. First year there was 1970, so 71. Goodness gracious, this is 47th season doing the games. How about that?
Johnny Carson invited him a lot to be on The Tonight Show. He was really funny.
Yeah, he did. I mean, like I said, I thought it was the 70s that he started. Well, it turned out that it was 71. It was the 70s, but 1971, so the second year the Brewers were in Milwaukee. He's with Jeff Levering to call the games. Now, I know he's cut way back. I just want to see how far back he's cut. Because Uecker is now 83 years old. How about that? Yeah, you hear that call? That call, I mean, that 83-year-old guy making that call. Sounds pretty good to me. Uecker announced he's going to, 2010, he was out 10 to 12 weeks, heart surgery. Aortic valve, portion of his aortic root were successfully replaced. Return to broadcasting, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't say how many games. He does not do the full schedule. I know that. The reason I know that is that Brian Anderson does some, and then when Brian Anderson makes the move or has to do something for TBS TNT, my friend Matt LePay, Wisconsin play-by-play guy, fills in on the Brewers for Brian Anderson. There's a domino effect to it. And by the way, Matt LePay, our deepest condolences about, I want to say 3 weeks ago, lost his dad. So, in Ohio, Matt's about as good a guy as you can find out there. Well, how about that? Euchre, 83 years old, huh? You know how long he played in the majors? 6 years.
He was a Philly for about a cup of coffee, but...
Parts of 2 years.
Yeah.
Parts of 2 years. He was a Philly.
200 lifetime average, 146 hits, 14 home runs, 74 RBIs in 297 games.
Yeah. It's 297 more than I have.
Me too. Famous Bob Uecker quote, "The biggest thrill a ball player can have is when your son takes after you. That happened when my Bobby was in his championship Little League game. He really showed me something. Struck out 3 times. Made an error that lost the game. Parents were throwing things at our car and swearing at us as we drove off. Gosh, I was proud."
Yes. How about that? Wow.
How do you catch a knuckleball? You wait until it stops rolling, then go
rolling,
pick it up.
Yeah. Right, yeah, I always love that
Yogi
one.
Yogi Berra had to inspire him on that one.
Yeah, I always liked that one. Always liked that one. So the biggest highlight of his career was a home run he hit off of Sandy Koufax. Euchre says, "I always thought that that would be the hit that would keep Koufax out of the Hall of Fame." you know what? You know, all the clowning around and the great sense of humor and everything like that. The guy's always been a great, great baseball broadcaster. Really has been. Yeah, Bob Uecker on the call there. Still doing the Brewers games his 47th season. The first season in Milwaukee, he did not do the games, so he started doing their games in 1971. Wow. Pretty good. All right. You think about it, dude. Some baseball broadcasters, we talk about Vin Scully, of course. You know, but Denny Matthews, Kansas City. He's been there a long time. Let's see. Joe Castiglione's been with the Red Sox for 36 years. John Sterling's been with the Yankees a long time. I mean, Scott Fransky, he's starting to get there. Greg Brown's been with the Pirates for over 20. Tom Hamilton, Indians, a couple decades minimum. People get these jobs, they keep these jobs. Hey, what's next? The Penn State basketball guy, 36 years? I mean, really? Now you get the job, you keep the job. It's really kind of amazing when you think about it. And he's 83, still good to this day. Not bad. Reuben Foster is not going to be invited to the draft. He is one of the two with the diluted samples that they were talking about yesterday, the other one being Drabil Peppers. Gary and Conley talk about the timing. Accused of rape, lawyer denies allegations. He's accused of raping a woman in a Cleveland hotel earlier this month, according to Cleveland police. Conley has not been arrested. He is thought to be a first-round pick. Mike Mayock told Peter King of MMQB, which I brought up yesterday, that one general manager told him, that they had a meeting on medical records, on medical issues with the scouts that lasted 5 hours because there's more of them in this draft than ever. So Gary Conley now has this hanging over his head, and whether he did it or not, nobody knows. I mean, there is a report as to what, there's been no arrest. It is alleged that he met the woman in an elevator at a downtown hotel and brought her back to his hotel room, and then the woman did report the incident. Then she went to a local hospital where a rape kit was administered. But the woman also refused to speak to police, according to the report. According to the police report, Conley's friend said nothing happened between Conley and his accuser, and that she was angry he asked her to leave. Conley, by the way, is a top 20 pick, at least at this hour, but who knows what happens with that after this story is out there, true or not. Obviously, none of us are there, so we're all guessing. Reuben Foster, not invited to the draft. Was not invited. Now, whether Peppers is invited or not remains to be seen. But Foster has not been invited to the draft. It's another guy who's thought to be a surefire top 10 pick. But ever since this draft process has started, it's been a problem. You had a problem out in Indianapolis. Now you get this. He was sent home from the combine, got into an argument with a hospital worker during medical checks. Tested positive at the combine for a diluted urine sample. He said that was the result of excessive water intake while he was trying to get over the flu. That sounds like familiar. These guys come up with this stuff and they act like we're all stupid. I know you're trying to come up with the best story possible, but the world is not dumb. And then Dale Jr. is going to retire after the 2017 season. This is a gigantic blow for NASCAR. Now, can you blame him? He sat out. How much did he sit out last year, Sean, with a concussion?
He was pushing at least, oh my goodness, 8 to 10 races off the top of my head. Quite a long stretch he was out.
It says here he missed 18 races.
Well, more than that, for
because
sure.
Because of
yeah.
concussions.
Just recently got married within the past year. And I remember Dale, one of his first interviews after he got back into the car, said it was a really scary situation. So now with a new bride, puts things in perspective, wants to enjoy a great quality of life and have a family. So in a way, don't blame him one bit.
Well, he also missed a couple races in 2012 because of concussions. Hey, I mean, can you blame him? No, you can't blame him. And look, on this circuit, I don't think there's any doubt. I think you can easily argue he is the most popular driver on the circuit.
I've only ever been to one NASCAR race, and it was in, I want to say, it was later in the year after Dale Sr. passed away. It was the August Pocono race, and actually the suit and I, we went and covered it, and we were in the pits throughout the day, and there was a portion of the race where Dale Jr. was leading, and yes, he was the one that got the biggest ovation out of anyone else, and the crowd just went absolutely crazy.
All right. Well, it's interesting that in the history of NASCAR, they do everything by points. He's never won the points championship. Most cup wins without a title. Junior Johnson, 50 wins, best finish ever for points, sixth. Mark Martin, 40 wins, best finish, second. Fireball Roberts, I know you're a big fan, 33 wins, second. Denny Hamlin, 29 wins, second. Carl Edwards, 28 wins, second. Dale Earnhardt Jr., 26 wins, best finish, third. Fred Lorenzen, 26 wins, best finish, third. Now, that's the overall season championship. His Twitter profile says it all. Retired dealership service mechanic, former backup fullback for the Mooresville Blue Devils varsity soccer team, aspiring competition in the barbecue pitmaster. There you go. I mean, how much money has he made from commercials? I mean, you look at, who makes money on commercials out of NASCAR? He does.
Kevin Harvick. Kevin Harvick does. Richard Petty.
Richard Petty. I mean, those are the guys that really do it. Now, Carl Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really.
Yeah, Dale's been on there prepping, hustling insurance and tax preparation.
Tell me about it, because, he came out for the coin flip of the Tax Slayer Bowl a year ago.
Didn't they put the car at the 50?
Oh, they put the car out there. He's out there. The people are going, yeah, Dale. I'm like, okay, yeah, flip the coin. Let's go. You know me. Let's go. Let's move. Kevin hates for that when I do that. Suit's like, oh, come on. It's Dale Jr. Flip the coin. Let's go. We're here for the game. Sue would have loved the Rose Bowl. It was all the Olympians. Janet Evans, Greg Louganis, Allison Felix.
That's right. They're the grand marshals of the parade. Yeah, that's right. Greg flipped the coin, didn't he? I think.
Yeah, it was like, look, let's go flip it. Let's move. I'm sorry. I don't get enamored by this stuff. Let's go. I remember in 2009, Cloris Leachman was the grand marshal, and they gave her the coin and she just held it. And they're like, "Flip the thing! What? Flip it!" I was like, "Oh, let's go!" Oh man, she forgot. That's why we gave you the coin. All right. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right. Sporting News put out this article. Michael McCarthy wrote it for TSN. Layoffs at ESPN might turn out to be worse than predicted. They say they're going to cut maybe 70 TV radio anchors, reporters, analysts, and online writers over the coming days and weeks. This could be worse than the 40 to 50 on-air talents originally predicted. They're saying now it's up to 70. The numbers may reflect the inclusion of online writers, such as you mentioned Paul Kuharsky, who covers the Titans. He's not going to be renewed. One source warned, quote, this could be a bloodbath. ESPN corporate campus eerily silent today, said another source, as staffers anxiously waited to see who will survive what management euphemistically describes, and you know how much I hate word games, and this is a word game, right-sizing. You know what? Yeah, you blew it. It's not right-sizing. We'll see them laying you off. It's like the dead calm before a horrible storm. Some ESPN stars are making between $1.5 million and $3 million a year, according to sources. They're not going to make that kind of scratch out of the networks, they said. To save their jobs, some of these talents are accepting pay cuts to stay with the network. It's no coincidence the layoffs are taking place before ESPN's parent company's release of its second quarter financial results on May 2nd, or May 9th. So this is when it's really happening. They've lost 13 million subscribers over 5 years. The brass in Bristol have to show Disney management at Wall Street is willing to bite the bullet of costs. They are not growing, so the only way to show fiscal responsibility is to lay people off, said the insider. This is all Wall Street-driven. This is about Disney ordering a code red. ESPN will not comment. Some ESPN anchors, fearing the loss of their jobs, are proactively asking management if they can cut their salaries, according to Sporting News. The move to renegotiate existing contracts makes some sense. ESPN is poised to lay off or buy out dozens of SportsCenter anchors, reporters, commentators, and online writers. So rather than waiting for the Turk to come knocking on cutdown day, some on-air personnel and or their agents are asking if they can keep their job in exchange for reduced pay. Their pitch is simple. They love ESPN. They don't want to leave. They're willing to take one for the team, even if it means less cash and exposure at the worldwide leader in sports. Hey, can you blame them? That's worth a shot. So we'll see. The company is expected to announce the new Mike Greenberg solo show on ESPN shortly.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I always laugh about that one because if you play it all the way through, the one says, "And you're an idiot, a jerk." He goes, "Well, that's awfully personal." He says, "Well, this is abuse." He says, "I'm only here for an argument." He goes, "Oh, I am so sorry. I feel awful." He says, "It's one door down." Oh. Let's move quickly before we get to Corey Chavis. And I'll bring this up again after we're done with Corey. I was mentioning this to Sean during the break. Last week, Daniel Roberts of Yahoo Finance reported the axe would most likely fall at ESPN between May 1st and the 9th. So that's next week. The story has drawn nearly 3,000 comments. Of the 3,000 comments, 50% of them say to get rid of Jamel Hill and Michael Smith. How about that? Not exactly a ringing endorsement. Very pleased, a true ringing endorsement here. 11 years in the NFL, CBS Sports Network draft specialist and creator of DraftNasty.com. That other pregame show is on CBS Sports. Then the draft special is tomorrow night at 10. Corey Chavis, we welcome you. Thanks so much for carving out a few minutes for us today.
Hey, man, thanks a lot for having me. I'm pretty excited about being on.
Well, we're excited to have you on because I was talking about this earlier. The work that people do in our business, Corey, which you are deeply a part of now, is work that people don't see. It's that prep work. How much prep work do you put in to do something like this to cover 3 days' worth?
Well, you know what? I'll be honest. My because I do a publication and I've actually written 14 books on the NFL draft, NBA draft, Major League Baseball draft. So a lot of times before the draft gets started, my work is kind of done. I got to have everything done probably a month in advance. And so at this point, it's more of just sitting back and actually seeing some of your picks actually just implode at times with some of this off-the-field stuff. But in terms of just the reports and all the stuff that you put into it on the road, I'm on the road probably 32 weeks out of the year going around looking at these guys, going around to games and shooting games and doing various stuff, scouting to actually write while I'm doing it. So, I mean, it definitely is a lot of work.
Oh, it is a lot of work indeed. Let's get to the guys that right now, reputation-wise, are being hurt. Reuben Foster would be one. Jabril Peppers of Michigan would be another. And now today, Gerrion Conley. What does that do in your mind that sends the draft night, especially the first night, into an uproar? Because all three of these guys were projected to be in the top 18.
Yeah, they were all guys that were in our top 10 at Draft Nasty magazine. But, you know, for us, in terms of, like, how it works, I think it just means somebody else moves up. And I think that, you know, probably the guy with the best case scenario, in my opinion, and that's done the best damage control thus far would be Foster. And I think the fact that he did the car wash and doing all those different things to try to explain some stuff away, not sure it's all going to fly completely, but I think it does help his cause a little bit more than the other two, simply because, at least in Conley's case, I don't know if teams will have enough time to vet and figure out what is real and what isn't real, or if they have gotten into it, there hasn't been a definitive conclusion as of yet.
Corey, Myles Garrett is not perfect, but he certainly is an intriguing prospect. When you've watched him in person, you've watched tape, what is it about Myles Garrett that makes him a solid choice for whomever gets him?
Well, I mean, aside from the fact that you can start off with the athletic bloodlines, I mean, people, you got to take into effect his mother, Audrey, was an All-American hurdler at Hampton in the early 80s. His sister was a state championship hurdler as well at Martin High School. So she's also been an NCAA championship thrower. So, you know, when you and when you look at the fact that his brother played the NBA. So I think there's a lot that goes into just his bloodlines, period. He can align in a lot of different spots for you. I think as an end, he's tall, long, and jerky. I mean, he does a good enough job at producing a 45-degree angle going against tackles that he can naturally challenge, even though I do think there are occasions where he plays too high. If you're looking for the negatives, certainly, you know, that you can go back to the Lyle Collins game in 2014 against LSU as a game where you're going against an NFL-caliber tackle or guard and you struggled in the run game. And that's been something that's been off and on. I thought he got better against the run. And then the other negative would be the lack of sacks on the road in terms of in his career. 25 of his career sacks came at home. So, you know, there's little things here and there, but in terms of just natural ability, the ability to be able to bend the corner, get skinny, elusivity, and just the ability to be flexible, I think all those things rank as pluses. Plus, I think he has a lot of upside to get better.
Corey, what about the quarterback part now? This is interesting because if there's a run on quarterbacks, there are certain teams, for example, like the Eagles, that benefit because it gives them more options when they pick at 14. How do you rank the quarterbacks in this thing? And do you think it's a decent quarterback class or do you think it's mediocre?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of depth. I mean, now, do you have elite level talent in terms of like top five picks? I don't know about that. I think Mahomes has top five talent. I don't think he's a top five pick because essentially there's a lot of the transitional period he'll face. I think he's the top guy. Watts is number two. And then Davis Webb, three. Kaiser, four. Trubisky, five. I think most, and then after that, you've got a second tier, in my opinion, slightly below, because all those guys have second round grades. And then you've got Nathan Peterman, Brad Kaya, and Joshua Dobbs. And then if you want to go deeper, you know, you can find a sleeper like C.J. Beathard. It may be in the fourth round or later. So I think there's a lot of different players that are available in terms of at the position. Any elite level talent, not sure, but certainly a lot of depth. Because we didn't even mention Seth Russell, Chad Kelly, Gerard Evans, Mitch Leidner. I mean, there's a lot of other quarterbacks that are day three options. A lot of those guys probably won't get drafted.
All right, so that brings the question up. You've got Mitchell Trubisky, five in terms of your evaluation, while others talk about him being the first quarterback off the board. Why do you have him where you do? What have you seen that doesn't exactly have you enamored as a guy who would understand how to attack that kind of guy?
Well, yeah, I think it's a good question. Again, I want to preface that by saying he had a second-round grade, so I feel like we are, you know, pretty positive in terms of where he's at. But, again, you have to take a look at a lot of the things that he didn't do. I mean, I thought he failed to control the ball against Virginia Tech in the rain. Certainly had to, you know, we counted six drop passes in that game. There's been wild, erratic chances that he's taken with the ball, even though he only threw six interceptions this year and none in 2015 in limited action against Georgia, where the mistakes happened. Backed up. You have a chance to throw a screen. You throw a screen and ends up being a safety. You could look at the Stanford game, getting fooled, you know, in that game, you know, twice. It was similar types of disguise when you're actually after the snap and the post-snap part of the game. So you can find the negatives. Certainly there were a lot of positives as well. I think he's an anticipatory thrower outside the numbers. I think he definitely has a quick, compact release. He has good feet in the pocket. He's mobile and he's strong. So there are a lot of positives. And then the lack of experience certainly is kind of a no-brainer in terms of a negative overall. And the fact that Marquise Williams was entrenched as a starter with him on campus.
And again, the positive is you had him as a second-round grade. You don't have him as a seventh-round grade. You're just talking about the nitpicky things that you have to go through if you're going to make him a first-round pick.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I didn't have any, none of these players had first-round grades. But, again, a second-round grade in terms of, for example,
yeah.
Patrick Mahomes has a second-round grade, but he's 20th on the big board. So for us, you know, that would mean they could still possibly have value in the first round. We only had 13 first-round grades. So, I mean, I think it's a thought relative to the teams. And there are a lot of teams that will probably end up having just 13, 14, 15 first-round grades. I think a lot of times fans get enamored with first and second round, when in reality, year to year, there aren't 32 first-round grades. There's just 32 spots in the first round you have to fill. I think normally they have more second-round grades. And for us this year, our second-round grades go all the way up through the 82nd prospect. So you'll be in the third round, in our opinion, getting the value of a second-round caliber player.
In fact, I made that statement on the show last week that I thought in the first round, I thought there were only 18 to 20 true first-rounders in here, but there are going to be 32 of them when it's all said and done. What about Deshaun Watson? I always talk about the Alabama syndrome. Well, Johnny Manziel did great against Alabama, too. Does he have to change in the NFL because he is such a flat-footed thrower?
Yeah, I like what you said about the flat-footed. Now, you know, the big thing that we saw with him in our film study, and I talked, you know, I had one of the guys who works with me actually went and saw him in person twice. And one of the things that we talked about in terms of their front foot, there's a left knee thing going on. Where's a brace on his left knee? I haven't heard much about this in terms of other people, but it's something that, you know, we thought that really in terms of stepping into that off of his front foot, kind of reminded me a little bit of Sean Manuel when he came out, that front plant leg, stepping into it with consistency. You know, I thought that was an issue. He doesn't have a lot of bend on that front foot. And I think, and that a lot of times I think has affected his accuracy, particularly even sometimes when throwing to his right. So I think there's a lot of things that he's going to have to work on in terms of the transfer of that weight. Just with that, and I don't know how much teams have looked into it, but that was something that we thought was a major weakness. And also, I think he has a lot of another thing that it wasn't been talked about maybe from others that we saw on film. A lot of his balls get batted down to an inconsistent delivery point. And so that's something else that you're going to have people always in NFL clouding those passing lanes. He's going to have to do a better job of finding clear passing lanes, or he's going to give up 3 to 5 snaps a game. And you can't do that in the NFL because you're not going to get the 95 plays you got against Alabama.
You got that right. Running backs now. Obviously, Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, and then the Joe Mixon story. So how do when you and your people sit down, Corey, and look at how they grade out on your board, what order do you have them in?
Well, Mixon's number one, and then Leonard Fournette, and then Dalvin Cook, and then Marlon Mack and Alvin Kamara, Deontay Foreman, P. Ryan and Connor would be next. And then you got a combination of guys, Hunt, Clement, Brian Hill. I know you're going to ask about McCaffrey. Well, he's our number three all-purpose player in the draft.
Right.
In terms of, you know, and that's behind Adoree Jackson and Cameron Sutton from Tennessee. And he had a second-round grade. So for us, Mixon.
And believe me, if I had a choice on the athlete board as somebody who saw Adoree Jackson in person in doing the Rose Bowl, you're right. Jackson should be the number one athlete on there.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that said it's actually, you know, when that was actually one of the more complete all-purpose boards that we, you know, put together during our time doing this in 2009. That was something that really was an impressive position, and certainly McCaffrey is a kind of a jack of all trades, a Swiss Army knife. But Mixon, underrated receiver. I think he's a guy that, you know, is a pretty good kick returner, but averaged 13.8 yards per catch in his career. I thought he was a very good option route runner. Concentration lapses showed up with him on tape, which kind of goes to the maturity stuff off the field. But I thought in terms of just natural receiving ability, he was as good as anybody in a long time, particularly when you consider the fact he could run option routes and line up in the slot at 230 pounds. So I think that's the thing that kind of separates him just boy, a lot of talent probably won't be in, probably won't go until day three. And then Fournette, the body of work, the strength, there are some durability concerns. Didn't finish the season. Dalvin Cook did finish the season. He also has durability concerns. Marlon Mack, we think, is very underrated in this draft. You could compare him to Tevin Coleman with the Falcons. That kind of explosion runs a little tall. He needs to get his pad level down. And then Alvin Kamara, we thought it was the best pass protector running back in this class, even though he was only 214 pounds. But at that weight, that's still 12 more pounds than McCaffrey. So that's something you got to consider, the weight issue with these backs. The normal running back in the NFL is about 215 to 20 pounds, 218 to be exact. All of these guys we're talking about are at least 213. The lightest one is Cook at 210. Then you drop 8 pounds in McCaffrey at 202. So that's just something he'll have to overcome at the next level. But it looks like, from all indications, that McCaffrey will probably be a first-round draft pick.
Well, this guy knows. 11 years in the NFL. He was a second-round pick himself, 33rd overall, 11-year career. Now a CBS Sports Network draft specialist and creator of DraftNasty.com. That's DraftNasty.com, and the N is capitalized. And you can tune into CBS Sports Network's That Other Pregame Show draft special Wednesday night at 10 p.m. We could go on for a long time on this, and I'm sorry to say that the time is limited to now. Thanks so much for even giving us even this today. We appreciate it very much, Corey.
Oh, man, thank you so much for having me. I like some of the stuff we talked about. It was pretty cool. I hope to come back on again soon. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, we will get you back on soon. Thank you, my friend. That is Corey Chavis, 11 years in the NFL. 11 years. He was the 33rd overall pick in the draft when he came out in 1998, so he knows what this is about. And we're talking about all the first-round picks and so forth. But look, he carved out an 11-year career as a second-round pick. Well, my broadcast analyst, Jack Ham, this goes back, obviously, to 71. I mean, but Jack was a second-round pick. So, you know, you can get great picks all over the place. As much as we concentrate and get enamored with the first round, it's all part of the show, obviously. We do. All right, we'll come back. We'll wrap this up in a moment. Corey was great. I love getting on guests like Corey Chavis. Just knows his stuff. And again, when you get a guest on is, does the audience learn something? There's example A right there. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Get outside and clean up the yard.
Yes, dear.
Springtime means cleanup time, even at Sundary Motors Ford. Sundary Motors Spring Inventory Cleanup has begun. Once a year, SMC takes their entire new Ford inventory and prices them at levels not seen before. SMC is where you want to be to choose from 33 Ford Escapes starting at $19,380. Sundary Motors has sold over 40,000 new Ford trucks in the past 102 years. SMC is where you want to be to choose from over 4 city blocks of new Ford trucks. F-150s starting at an amazing $24,919. SMC is where you want to be if you want a brand new Ford Focus from $14,835. SMC is where you want to be for a 2017 Edge starting at $27,420. SMC has your next Ford Explorer ready to roll at an unheard of $29,835. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. SMC, satisfying more customers, selling more cars. A tradition of trust since 1915.
Well, you know, the ESPN story is not a fun story at all. I hate reporting on stuff like this. Would anybody take any great joy in reporting somebody else's job demise? I mean, my goodness, you can't. But it's a story that inside the business is big, but it's also a story that's big for you, the viewer. You watch these people. They say that the cuts were going to be deeper than first imagined. Instead of being 40 to 50, it could be as many as 75 or 80. ESPN book author James Andrew Miller told Richard Dice on a Sports Illustrated podcast he expected that many to lose their jobs. Well, last week, Daniel Roberts of Yahoo Finance reported the axe would most likely fall between Monday, would probably start on Monday, and in all likelihood, it's probably Tuesday that next week that they'll find out. And they say all of them will find out between May 1st and May 9th. His story on Yahoo Finance has drawn 3,000 comments. And that shows about the viewer passion. And here's the interesting part about this. 50% of the 3,000 comments say that they should get rid of Michael Smith and Jemele Hill, the new 6 o'clock sports center. Now, my understanding is those two have a 3-year guaranteed contract. So they're not going to get rid of them, I don't think. Yet they're the ones that have drawn the ire of those who... Now, I haven't seen the show. Obviously, I've seen the promos for it, and the promos do nothing to want to draw me to watching it either. I sit there and go, really?
But, I've probably watched a quarter hour of one segment, and then I heard Ernie Johnson was going to be on there a few weeks ago to promote his new book, so I wanted to watch that for about 10 minutes. Other than that, I haven't watched much either. But it's a completely different format compared to the other sports centers on around the clock.
ESPN reportedly is making an offer to anchors that they can walk away with 50% of the money left in their contracts if they agree to leave, or they can hold out for what they're owed and likely be taken off TV. This is hard. And a lot of this is going to be, you know, dependent on their age, their experience, things like that. They think, I mean, Mike Greenberg just signed a new contract, $6.5 million. They think Neil Everett, Scott Van Pelt, Jemele Hill, Michael Smith, Stan Verrett, they say they're safe along with Stephen A. Smith. Again, Hill and Smith signed 3-year guaranteed contracts. Yet when it comes to the comments section, they're the first two people want out. And it goes back to what I've been saying. People want to see sports. They don't want to see all this stuff.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.